Hello, everybody. This is Jughead, and welcome to Jughead's Basement, the Osaka, Japan years, or year, who knows? Remember, www.jugheadsbasementpodcast.com. Go there, check out the episodes, check out a little bit of a blogging thing I do there, and then go to the right side and press that button that says Patreon, and it'll whiz you, take you, transplant you at a new location where you can sign up at the $2, $5, and $10 tiers to donate to the show. You can do that monthly, and what you get for that is varying degrees of unedited videos of the audio podcast that you get a little bit later. You get the video podcasts almost immediately after I conduct them, which is usually a week to 3 or 4 weeks before the at-home audience gets the podcast version. You get that, plus you get entries of me working on my new book for Rare Bird Lit. I haven't got the name yet, but I am thinking of calling it We Screeched. And it's a photo journal and a short story book about the bands that I have been in. You get sneak peeks at that, plus photos, at the $2, $5, and $10 tiers. If you pay for the year in advance, then you get a little discount on that, and you help yourself out for not having to think about it, and you help me out because I know exactly how much I have for that year, and that really helps me organize how much time I can dedicate to this podcast. That's enough of that. Let's do this Australian interview. I love that place, and I was very excited when Fat Records approached me about interviewing Jay from Friends of Ram. So, let's dig into it. Well, I have a thousand ways to get through 100 days, and I'm one of them is good, that's what I've done. I'm baking in the dark, drinking whiskey in the park, underneath the blazing overland sun. But when my baby smiles at me, I go to rehab. When my baby smiles at me, I go to rehab. Right now, you're listening to When My Baby Smiles at Me, I Go to Rehab by Frenzel Rom, off of Smoko at the Pet Food Factory from 2021 on Fat Records. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Jughead's Basement, Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guests, episode 168 with Jay Wally of Frenzel Rom. On this episode, we talked to Jay about the Australian TV show Rage, building an audience and the intricacies of a band message, living by example compared to blatant activism, on the road to Fat Records and the sarcastically awesome decision to sign to Sony Records, playing at the edge of your ability, recording at the Blasting Room, the complexity of community, plus much rumbly rumbling with frenzily rambling more! But when my baby smiles at me, I go to rehab. When my baby smiles at me, I go to rehab again.
Hello.
Well, hello.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. First of all, should I call you Jay or Jason, or what do you prefer?
Jay's good.
Jay, great.
How? Where are you?
I'm in Osaka, Japan, right now.
Oh, where are we? Are you living there?
I do. I live between here and Chicago, back and forth, actually. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Japan's great.
Yeah, I know. You're. It's actually interesting because I go back and forth, and it's hard to arrange interviews while I'm here. But you're in Australia, so it's only an hour difference.
Much the same time zone.
You're my second interview today. I don't usually do two in one day, but I'm trying to get a lot done in one day. But I've done my studying, so I think I'm prepared.
Oh, cool. Who else did you interview today?
Dimitri from Off today.
Oh, wowee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had done Keith Morris a while ago, and then I liked that band so much. I was like, I should probably talk to Dimitri.
Hell yeah.
Where should we start here? I'm so excited. In some ways,
man, I'm quietly very excited talking to you.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very old Preaching Weasel fan.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I actually didn't know much about the band because I mean, I dropped out of listening to music for a long period of time. So I didn't, I inhaled a lot of it the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And your Australian controversy—that was—that's fun stuff.
All that stuff. Yeah, I mean, 2 days in Friends of Rome, that's really all you need.
But one of the things, I mean, it might seem out of the blue, but one of the things that my friend Ben here, who actually had said he's one of my good friends here, he actually keeps me sort of sane here. He's from Australia, and he said he saw you guys at a bar, what his first hardcore show, and you actually introduced him to Royal Crown Revue because you're about to go on a Warped Tour. So you got him
Oh,
into you. I said, "Do you know anything about Friends of Rome?" He goes, "Yeah, they got me into swing."
I mean, it sounds like I may have been drinking.
Could be, it could be. But what I wanted to get around to there is I often like to talk about a few Australian people that I've interviewed about the that show Rage. I mean, I think some of the videos that I've seen were on that show. And for like a lot of my audiences in America or some in Europe that don't even know the effect of like that video station on music in Australia and then around the world.
And the fact that it was on, it is on, sort of so late at night and stuff, like it goes all through the night. So, you know, you've got every chance being like a new band or a young band or a band that, you know, isn't in the mainstream at all to have your video played at 3:30 a.m. or whatever, which is still a buzz because, you know, it's been around for a long time. That a bit of an institution. I guess it's sort of linked loosely with Triple J, which is the kind of national youth broadcaster, which is also like, I don't think there's many countries around the world that has something like that. That's like a, you know, for better or worse, will play kind of left of center music, and a lot of new music and stuff like that. And they sort of have a charter to do that. But it's sort of under the umbrella of the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. So it's like government funded and stuff.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I want to touch on that, like I said, I inhaled some of the stuff so that there's that controversy that sticks out with Jackie O. And actually, someone did a breakdown, a YouTube video like last year of like the controversy over the years and how it still goes on. But my more interest is what environment were you growing up in? Because I had a similar reaction to Spin magazine where they talked about Weasel like 15 years after we were a band and they were saying this new band. And I was like, this is like a top of the line magazine. Well, how are they not connected to what actually is going on in the world? So so for that reason, I'm kind of interested in your take on, and that's why I brought up Rage too, because Rage seems to have tried to get some underground music into the mainstream or heard. But what was going on where that controversy became like a thing? Like,
I mean, that was sort of a little bit of a mountain out of a molehill, to be honest. Like more people talk to me about that one phone conversation than I talk to me about any song that I've
yeah,
written in
I mean
my
that's why I'm getting it out of the way, Jay, because I want to talk to you about more, but I'd like to see if there's anything new to say about
No, I
that.
mean, it was like we played some festival in Darwin, and the host was sort of late, and then we kind of like Lindsay came on and played like Thunderstruck over the top of her and sort of cut her off, and like she was cutting into her set. It wasn't anything major, but then I went on stage and went on a bit of a rant about the sort of environment of the time, which was a lot of bands were being dropped from their labels because they were putting all their money into these kind of very short-lived careers of these kind of talent show, like, you know, American Idol, and, you know, it's just the Australian Idol. It was sort of the early stages of that. Had a bit of a bee in my bonnet about that, and sort of went off on a bit of a rant. But then it was the other guy who then sort of said, oh, I want you to come on to my radio show and apologize about, you know, cutting off my friend or whatever. And I didn't really know who they were or anything. But then, and all my flatmates sort of buoyed me up, and they're like, just go on and tell the truth, you know. And so I just sort of went on, and kind of strangely, they just never cut me off. And so I just went on this bit of rant. And it was straight because it was like a commercial network, I guess. Like it was sort of pretty broad reaching. So I think I even remember having like a doctor's appointment, and my doctor was like, oh, I heard this guy on the radio and he was really giving it to this guy. And I was like, oh, that was me.
Do you have any like I like I said, and this is the reason I try to hit something different. I'm not as interested about that controversy as maybe as since it still sticks around, like it's on the internet. So have you learned or have you changed any feelings about what had gone down or what you guys did? I mean,
Oh
like you said, it was
no,
a
no.
pretty small deal that's kind of escalated and snowballed and.
I mean, the guy's kind of a known dead shit, so I don't feel any remorse or anything like that. But when I listen to it now, which is very rarely, but if I do happen to come across it, then I can hear how nervous I am, and I feel like there's heaps of other stuff that I would prefer, like would like to say, like to add to it.
Let me get the like for like I've actually had Dave Faulkner from Hoodoo Gurus, one of my favorite Australian bands. He was on the show. Amazing guy. He started out in punk bands too, you know. But is that world in Australia like so different from where you guys come from? Or do those paths cross at all? Or is that
I mean, I did, my paths did cross with Dave Faulkner, because I was doing so I share this room with the guys in the Hard-Ons, and I don't know if you know Ray and Blackie from that band Hard-Ons, but
I tried to get
Blackie.
them on, but they had a tragedy a few years ago. They lost their like traveling guy that worked with them, and then
Oh
they
yes.
weren't doing interviews for a while, but I meant to get them on and
Yeah, that's Blackie's rig right there. But
Oh, yeah.
he had this crazy plan. So Dave's a big Hard-Ons fan, and Dave does this they do a festival out here with the Hoodoo Gurus called Dig It Up, and they brought out the Sonics, and it's sort of a garagey kind of sort of older kind of punk sort of festival. And so Blackie had this crazy concept where he wanted to release a song a day for a year. And so we recorded 366 songs, because it was a leap year, and they were all full production. Like,
You
bloody,
chose a leap year for
it chose a leap year. And then on January 1st of the following year, he put out a cover of Smoke on the Water. But like every other song was like totally, original and multi-genre. And but Dave came in, sort of embedded himself in the studio with us, and wrote a nice article for one of the papers here and stuff about it. But yeah, I guess we sort of came along a bit later than all of that. Like, we kind of, I guess I was early high school when Hoodoo Gurus was sort of at their kind of peak. And we sort of grew up listening to really like Screeching Weasel and, Bad Religion and The Queers. And in Australia, we were listening to Hard-Ons and Meanies and Cosmic Psychos. And they were sort of our, like, what we thought that they were, with sort of, felt like they'd been around, must have been around for ages, but actually they've probably only been a band for like a year or 2 years or something at that point. But they just seemed like superstars to us, they were just had everything dialed in. And the American stuff kind of came after that, I guess, where, those are the days where like someone that you knew, because Australia is so far away from everything, and like someone that you knew would go to LA and get like a Milk Crate of records, and they would be your records for a year, and like, so we'd have Descendants, and yeah, Screeching Weasel was like big part of it. And and that's like more where we came out of.
Yeah, my friend Ben said he heard of my band from a Fat Records compilation. So that those had made their way over there, I guess, back. I think I don't know if it was the Short People or Short Songs for Short People, or was one of those compilations that had like a bunch of different bands on there that.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I was with our first guitarist Ben yesterday, and we were staying overnight in this at this beach, and his daughter is just getting into the Ramones, and Ben's like, it's like, oh, if you like the Ramones, you should listen to Screeching Weasel or whatever. But it was like the first song that she'd put on by the Ramones, and he kind of stopped it to put on Screeching Weasel. I'm like, hey, mate, let's just start at the beginning for this girl,
Ease
12 years old.
her way into that. Let's put you there then. So you hear this music. Are you already interested in being in bands by then? Are you influenced from
Like,
what came over, or are you influenced more like from what was going on there and then you built yourself up?
well, yeah, we were, it was definitely what was going on here. But prior to that, I guess I'd played in like high school bands and stuff. But the older brothers and uncles and aunties and stuff, their music was like Deep Purple and, sort of blues based kind of rock and roll. So that's how we sort of learned how to play instruments, I guess. And but then, yeah, actually going to shows, like there weren't many people doing all ages shows, in that sort of era. So it was, when the, those bands like Hard-Ons and Meanies and stuff came along, like that for us was our sort of like, oh wow, that's way easier than Led Zeppelin. Like,
Did their approach open up to you how to do it yourself and touring wise? Because I know, I mean, United
For
States is
sure.
big, but a big thing about Australia is that there's cities that are so far apart from each other. It must be
Yeah,
difficult
for
to.
sure. There's a lot of driving, and a lot of driving with not many places to go in between, like especially if you're starting out. I mean, I guess the different one of the differences is we do have that youth radio network here, the Triple J network. So when eventually, like, we weren't on that at all for years, but when we did get on, we noticed that we could then play these little towns in between, in between the cities, because that sort of that radio station kind of goes everywhere. Yeah, those bands had forged a path to, be able to sort of they were kind of outside the regular industry, I guess. So we realized that actually all you needed to do was like either borrow a car or hire a van or something, and you could actually go to another city and play.
I talked to Joey Shithead from DOA yesterday, and I'm always fascinated with that generation before us, like the 70s, even Ramones, or we've affected by the Ramones. It's like it was so interesting to me to think about how they didn't know there was another game other than the mainstream game. Like, so they were basically
Yeah.
creating the idea of, like, honestly, that I don't like the phrase DIY much, but they
Yeah.
were actually creating that idea,
Yeah.
of, like, so I'm always interested in of us being inspired by those people to do even further that expression of just getting out there and doing it. But I just can't imagine going there and they're like still dealing with these like greasy promoters that are doing, also pushing like, bands I like Rush and Boston and stuff like that, but they're also dipping their toes into this new genre.
And kind of hostile environments, for a young band to put themselves in, hostile audiences sometimes. I mean, I remember the first tour we did, we went to Lismore and we put our first EP out, and it was called Dick Sandwich, and we had like on the cover it was basically this guy like eating this sandwich full of cocks, and but it was like cartoon drawing sort of thing. And we get to this pub in Lismore, which is like kind of 9 hour drive or something. And we even had like a sign on the side of the van saying on tour, and we're so excited. And we get there to Lismore, and the woman that ran the joint had like left the posters in the window, but blacked out all the penises, and then sort of promptly came out and said, like, "You are not playing here. You are not welcome. Go somewhere else," or whatever. Like, what? We just drove all this way. Look, we got a sign that says on tour. Like, it's
Oh,
our first.
man.
And also, why'd you leave the posters up at all?
Why do you leave it?
And we ended up, going and playing at a friend's house. And then the next night, we're playing in this place called Toowoomba. And the guy, the promoter of that show, was like, "If you want to fight, go into the front bar. If you don't want to fight, then just go into the bar where you're playing and play your show and just get the fuck out of here." And it's like, oh my God, we're not in town anymore.
What kept you doing it? Like, what was your
I
life
mean,
where
we were
it?
with each other. We had our gang, and even at that show in Toowoomba, remember there was this sort of little group of goths that were kind of hiding around the corner, that for them it was like a savior, like living in this town. And Toowoomba is totally different these days, and we'll go there a lot and play and whatever. But yeah, those days it was definitely like there was a hostility around that sort of regional touring. And we should go, that bands like The Birthday Party and stuff, like when they were kicking off, they were playing in these places, and they were doing pretty arty kind of aggressive stuff, and it was funny that I don't know which film it was, maybe one of the Nick Cave films. It is like, they're playing like the middle of Australia somewhere, and just have bottles thrown at them, and then they go to Berlin and they're like gods, they're just like absolute gods. Like, but they sort of, I don't know, like there's something that's born out of that sort of Australian kind of experience, I think, that hostility from the crowd and stuff. And I remember even seeing the Hard-Ons and sort of thinking, man, I feel like they hate me, as a crowd member, like this band, they're so tough. But there's real poppy melodies and sort of sickly sweet sort of distorted guitar solos and stuff. And but yeah, their attitude to the show was like, "We're not here to entertain you. Like, this is what we do. This is important." And yeah, it was very, very exciting, that stuff.
This is something I deal with too, both in theater and in music, about that I don't know, that line of shock value and fuck you to the audience, but also wanting that audience to like you at the same time.
Yeah, and buy a t-shirt.
Were you guys playing with that? Like, it's also interesting to me, like, irony through times and like how there's still compassionate. There's still compassion in Irene, and if that compassion goes away, if that compassion goes away, you end up with just, I don't know, like lame comedy, which happens. But
For sure. No, we have a lot of the all our shows, like there's a lot of love in the audience, like for each other. There's a lot of, like it gets pretty rowdy and stuff, but there's and we're always like kind of treading that line with taking the piss and being inclusive. And Friends of Rome's a pretty broad church. Like we have people like from different political backgrounds and different social economic backgrounds and stuff coming along and meeting for the same reason, which is just to sort of have a good time and get a bit rowdy, I guess.
Do you feel it's important for you and your band over the years to have some sort of message, or is that like a secondary thing, or is that super important that there's some, at the end of the day, some meaning achieved?
I mean, our message is like, sort of kind of shrouded, I guess, but it's definitely there. And like we don't really, get on stage and go like, we're all vegan and vegetarian, like these are the reasons why you should be too, like I think it's more important for people to come along and have a positive experience because people kind of know that about us anyway, like without us having to tell them. People know that we're not fucking voting for the equivalent of Trump or whatever. Like, people already kind of get that without us having to shout them down. I mean, the times I have done it. So we played this show in Wollongong, and this guy was really G'ing me up beforehand. He's this environmentalist guy, and he was talking about how they were kind of going to destroy this big mining company was going to destroy this beautiful escarpment behind him, and I was like kind of fired up when I got up on stage. I'm like, you people don't know how good you've got it here. Like, I just got the train down. This place is beautiful, and they're going to wreck it. You got to stop that, whatever. And then it sort of dawns on me halfway through this rant that really, probably like a large percentage of the audience have come from generations of miners, and that's the reason that they've all got jobs and that sort of stuff. And this one guy, like, so about Australia, but we have the our Liberal Party is actually our right wing party, and this guy like gets up and he's like, "We voted Liberal, you cunt!" And then this other guy, like, who had a broken leg, sort of hobbles over to him, and the guy like, and some other guy comes and knocks over the guy with a broken leg, picks up his crutch and starts like whacking the Liberal voting
What?
guy. And there's an all-out brawl. Police come. It's like awful, and I'm just standing there going, "Yeah." So anyway, about that old escape. You want to sing about bucket bongs, mate? Yeah.
Since doing this show, I've been fascinated with interview like political bands, and like I interviewed Anti-Flag and a couple other newer English bands. And I think it's, I'm really maybe a little cynical when it comes to that too, because I don't know how to do that without becoming like
Yeah, preach it to the choir.
preaching to the choir and stuff, and that, and also the complexity of issues are so complicated. Like you going up there and then realizing, oh my God, this is a much more complex issue than. So at the end of the day, I think a lot of these people that I've talked to have actually said that the ones that I respected were the ones like you're kind of saying, where your audience just gets to know what type of person you are, and you kind of live what you're saying in some ways.
That sort of stuff. I mean, my fear is sort of being too earnest as well. Like I feel like that's a crime in a punk band is to be too earnest, because we're not nurses, like we're not teachers. We're like just, up on stage having a crack and sort of swearing at people. And it's like you can't, can't be too earnest. And also, I don't really feel like the big sort of bands that I feel like do all that stuff well for me are bands like Midnight Oil or Old Mate from like Propaganda, who are like really smart guys, but sort of have this ability to use lyrics in a way that somehow doesn't feel like you're being talked down to or something. Like they write lyrics in a way that sort of it kind of elevates people in a way, like they're sort of saying sort of difficult and interesting concepts, but with this sort of passion that, yeah, you don't feel like you're being sort of spoken over or something like that. Like,
Rings true with me with that, my idea of, like, yeah, like I said, like the irony and compassion, like irony without compassion just is.
yeah, like Billy Bragg, Billy Bragg's like politics, and I heard him being interviewed the other day, and he was out in Australia, and he was saying there's only so much that you can sort of shout at someone about politics until, I'm paraphrasing, but it's only so much you can shout about politics until you actually just need a cuddle. And that's why a lot of his songs do have that in. There's this romantic sort of feeling to it, and kind of sly jokes and stuff, and you're not just being bludgeoned over the head with, some sort of political idea.
So, Jay, with this in mind, push me through your band going from just a band touring to putting out records. What labels were you dealing with then? Was there not options for you because for what you believed and for what you thought was proper?
Yeah, we sort of were just with friends, the friends that sort of thought they'd start labels and stuff, and for the first couple of records, and then I guess we signed to an independent label called Shock Records. That was sort of when we realized that we could actually probably try hard with the recordings, or try harder. Yeah, try to build it up through there, and then yeah, we were kind of on that label until about 1999, and then we made the awesome decision to sign to Sony Music, and they gave us heaps of money, and then dropped us after about 5 weeks.
5 weeks. Did you get any recordings out of that? I mean, were
Yeah,
you...
one, and it's universally regarded as our worst record.
Why
So it
do
was.
you feel you guys weren't true to yourself? I don't want to
Yeah,
stereotypical
no,
punk stuff,
it
but
was a
did it
bit of a
actually did it hit that level with you that you just didn't feel?
bit of a confluence of events. Like, I had been sick, and so I sort of quit drinking and quit all that stuff for years, and then had kind of didn't really know what to write songs about, and so I was a bit awkwardly introspective, and then also didn't really spend a lot of time, or enough time, kind of on the songs. And that was sort of also, and there was sort of, yeah, did feel like there was a lot of pressure to come up with something that maybe was, would have some sort of broad appeal. But then you listed the record, and it had exactly the opposite effect of a broad, whatever the opposite of a broad appeal is. Then it was a very narrow appeal. But we rallied after that, and we signed to Epitaph after that. And all through that era, I guess Fat Records, we were with those guys for the whole time. Mike's always been a big supporter of the band and stuff, and he's like, he'll kind of, when we first started, he did like a early 7-inch of ours, when we sort of around that time when we signed to Shock, and then, which was very exciting for us, because we knew all the Fat comps and all that stuff, and was like, wow, this is it. And then we put out the next record, and he's like, no, I don't think so. And then we put out another record, and he's like, no, I don't like that. And then we put out another record, but then we were touring in the States, and we saw him on the Warped Tour, and he saw us live again. He's like, oh, that's right, you guys are great. And so then he like then he sort of put out everything since then. And
I talked to Polly from the Bomb Pops, who she's a good friend of mine now, but she talked about how honest he is about what he does and doesn't like.
Actually, there was one other record that he didn't like, but he was going to put it out anyway. But he was like, you have to come to the States and help me tour it, like help me sell it if I'm going to do it or whatever. I'm like, I don't want to go there. He's like, oh, I'm not doing it. I'm like, all right, don't do it.
The last three were on Fat, but were the last three also had done at Blasting Room?
But as far as shows go, like, if we got every single Friends of Rome fan in America into one room, we'd have the best show ever. But you have to play like 40 shows in Bozeman, Montana, or whatever. Like, it's like playing 1,000 Canberras. It's like,
But what are you in Australia? Do you think you're like a notable band? Would you be on the list of top bands of Australian bands that if
Top
someone did
list
that list?
all time bands. I don't know. I don't know. We're one of those bands that either people know it or they absolutely don't know it. Like I'll go to shows or whatever. I'll be at shows, and be like, oh, you're playing Friends of Rome, you know, oh, I love Friends of Rome, whatever. And like, oh, it must be hard for you, like walking around town, you know, and like, what are you talking about? Like, like going to the IGA buying like bread, and the one behind the counter is like, oh my God, it's just like, is this guy homeless?
That reminds, I always thought it was like, yeah, sure, there's people out there, but there were that people out there that actually thought like me and Ben had like limos and mansions.
Where's your helicopter?
It's
Yeah, no, we're sort of got this sort of niche here, I guess. But as far as touring, like we do pretty good in Japan whenever we get there. We've been there like 11 or 12 times or something. And yeah, the States is just a beast, you know. Like, and
yeah.
we did like I think we did about six tours of the States, which is great when you're in your 20s and stuff. And we've supported a lot of bands, like, you know, a lot of fat bands and other bands. Playing with All was great, and you know, we played with NOFX and Less Than Jake and bands. Even did that first Blink-182 club tour before they blew up and stuff,
Wow.
which is like horrible. But you know, it was, yeah. But then kind of getting a bit older and stuff, and going, oh man, am I really gonna do that now? And especially like not drinking, you're like, man, that's gonna be a tough slog, you know, going playing in front of 40 people in like 30 different cities. It's like, put a bit of a stop to that, and then just, you know, focusing on places that actually like us. So this new record will be, I mean, there's gonna be a Broadway musical about it. So
I
yeah.
hope so. Can I be the, I am a Broadway actor. Can I?
Yeah, I know. I know. You put in a couple of words.
Well, let's get at the heart of that. You look at us. Look at us. We're in our older days, and we're still doing it. So there must be,
Yeah.
you know what I want to get, and maybe we can attach this to this, because in my trying to inhale your stuff and YouTube videos and stuff and interviews, it seems, even though he wasn't from the beginning, that your relationship with the Lindsay became pretty tight.
Yes.
And I know you had a drummer that stayed, has been there for a long time, but something about those videos that I see of you two almost made me wonder, like, why wasn't he there in the beginning?
Yeah, right. Well, I started the band with my dear friend Ben, who was way too smart to be in punk bands. And so he ended up going back to university. So we met at university, and he went back and finished his degree, and then I'd sort of carried on with the band. So I sort of replaced him with Lindsay, who was like a bit younger. It's like he joined the band when he was 17. I guess I must have been, I don't know, 22 or something, but when he joined, which felt like a vast age gap at that time,
Yeah,
you
no,
know.
I know that, yeah.
But then and then eventually we sort of flukishly got this job on the radio together. So we ended up working for Triple J doing their breakfast show. So we worked on that for I think I was there for about 3 or 4 years, and then he's still doing radio. So now he does like Grown Ups Radio down in where he lives, down near Wollongong, on the ABC. But yeah, we became tight. I mean, bit too tight at that point, you know. He was going out with my sister, and
Whoa.
we're in the band together,
Yeah.
and we're doing the radio together, like 6 a.m. starts and stuff. And then I had a break for a year. I went overseas and then came back and was more focused, and we've been firm friends ever since.
How did that relationship, do you think it at all affected the style of music you were doing? Like, did it change the direction of it at all?
You mean when once he joined? Yeah, he was I want to say, I'm not going to say a better guitarist, but a different, let's say a different guitarist to Ben. So he brought all sorts of ability to the I mean, now everything I say sounds so backhanded to Ben. Like, all this ability, like actual,
I mean, I don't know.
no, Ben's
I think
amazing. Like,
guitarists have to admit how good and not good they are. Like, I'm a good guitarist, but I'm not amazing. So I'm no
for me on this
vapid
new,
at a songwriter. So.
amazing. I mean, for me, Ben's style was really great too. Like, he had this sort of, and on this new record, I've been trying to kind of emulate that in my songwriting by like not giving kind of ideas to Lindsay and going, can you write me a riff or whatever? Because he's too good. I'm like, I want some real thickhead shit. I want some moronic, and I know that I can do that. So yeah, and Ben used to do stuff like that. Like he used to come up with these really cool, like pretty simple riffs and stuff, but like they had a lot of intent.
Yeah, I have to admit over the years that that's because people still come to me and I'll admit, I go, they'll say, oh, you wrote all those solos. And I go, well, I didn't write that one. That's Vapid. He's a genius and that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they still go, there's something about yours that's something there. And now I take that as I have pride on that, that there's something in my idiot way of playing that actually has some sort of passion that
Yeah. I mean,
they can
I feel like
hear.
it's much more exciting hearing someone play at the edge of their ability, no matter how good they are at it. You know, like whatever their ability is, as long as they're playing up to that's where the excitement is. You know, there's nothing more boring than hearing someone that's comfortable about, you know, what they're playing.
I know I've seen some of the videos where you are playing guitar, but why did you never commit yourself? Did you just like being that man with a microphone, or did you not have confidence?
I don't know why I picked up a guitar at all ever. I mean, it was like that stupid idea that you needed if there was certain part in a song that needed some rhythm part underneath it. I'm like, fucking shut up, dude. Like, no, it doesn't. Like, no one cares about that. So yeah, I don't know. I was looking for things to do, I think.
I do feel you're like a secure person, a front man, like the in a band.
I
Like,
mean, what secure is in? Am I about to be sacked? Like, is
can
my
you?
job
No,
secure?
man. Can you sell it? Do you sell it to your audience on a daily basis?
I feel like there's a bit of bluster, definitely bluster. Like, I get very anxious about it beforehand, which I think
Yeah.
is probably normal. Like, people that don't get nervous going on stage, there's like they're psychopaths.
I still get
But
nervous. Yeah, I always get
yeah,
nervous. Yeah.
it's just sort of a normal part of it. But then. Kind of, I mean, bands are, you're lucky because, you know, you do have this other personalities there to share the pain and anything that goes
Yeah.
wrong, everyone's fault, you know, like if like everything stops working or whatever, it's like we're all in this now, you know. And yeah, I don't know, like I've learned maybe to try, like I just like the best shows are when we're all just being ourselves, I guess, and not trying to be anything different. And I feel like that maybe comes across, hopefully. With the audience, like it resonates some way with the audience, because you know, really, like all the any mid-song banter or whatever, in between song banter is really just about what's been happening that day, or because we haven't seen each other, but we're sort of cracking jokes to each other, and you know, and sometimes at the audience expense, sometimes not, always at our own. But yeah, I don't know. I feel pretty confident most of the time, I guess. That's
Yeah.
really, like just saying a sentence like that, I sort of feel confident.
Yeah, like, well, I don't. All art has a little bit of doubt in it, I think. Unless you're Picasso, I guess. Then
Yeah,
I guess you don't have
I
any
don't even know that
doubt.
guy Paul Kelly, that Australian songwriter Paul Kelly, but he wrote this really great book and like a memoir kind of thing.
Hello, this is John in the future, and I've stayed kind of quiet during this episode, but I thought I'd fill in here that he is talking about Paul Kelly, of course, and the name of the book is How to Make Gravy, A to Z, a Mongrel Memoir.
And yeah, one of his lines was like, "Self-esteem is the enemy of creativity," like, which you know is extreme, but I know what he means. You know, when you're too, you know, if you think you're all that, you're probably not all that.
Sadly, the way creativity works is some of those people are all that. That's why I say creativity is a wily beast. You know, I learned that with improvisation where I could like, we had this troupe that would do like spontaneous improvised shows in front of the audience every week, and then we were like, oh, we didn't get to rehearse that week, so we sucked. Then the next week we rehearsed a lot, and then it wasn't much better. So it was, and then some one time where we didn't rehearse at all, and it was amazing. It's like there was no rhyme or reason to it. Like,
No, don't tell me that, because that's my only weapon in my arsenal is the feeling that like if I just practice enough, then the very worst that can happen is that I'll be like there instead of there, but I'm not going to be here. Like,
yeah. Well, I think in music is a little bit different because I do, because actually people often ask me what a difference between, for me, theater and music was. And for many years, I didn't have an answer, but I eventually came to realize that it's like, oh, at theater, I'm thinking all the time. Like I'm still, in the moment of the words that I've memorized, but I'm still like, highly contemplating. Where in music, there's sort of the way the collective works is I can have all this stuff drilled into my physical body, and then I can move past that a lot easier. Like spontaneity
True.
for me is a lot feels better in music than it does in theater to me.
I definitely have had those moments on stage where I've been like spitting out these lyrics, but in my mind, I'm like, have I put out the bins? Thursday. I should have put
Yeah,
out the bins.
that happens. I think, and that's one of the, me and Ben used to have arguments about it because he hated touring and playing out, and that was my love. I love that connection to an audience. But that's the one part of it that I understood is that he's not one of those people that just wanted to be out there and things are going through his head, but he took it to the extreme where he wouldn't go out at all, where I was like, you just got to fight that. You got to fight that. You got to, see your audience members. You got to try to find something in that moment that makes it, unique.
For sure. Yeah, no, I got friends here that like travel from, Sydney to wherever the hell in the States just to see Screeching Weasel because they know that they're never ever going to see him otherwise.
We haven't talked in years, but I still respect his commitment to his art. Now, talking about coming to the States, I was really interested because a lot of times now people can actually just record something somewhere and then send it to someone else to do. But you guys actually physically went to Colorado in the blasting room. So what are those adventures like for you?
Oh, it's amazing. Like it sort of legitimizes us in a lot of ways because for them it's important music, they've built this whole world based around this sort of faster melodic stuff. And I know they do all sorts of stuff now, like this kind of branches of that and all your big kind of career punks or your Rise Against and your Data Remembers and all your, whatever. But they come from like a pretty similar kind of place to us, and having Bill around, like, I was saying, like, we met him on some old tours back in the day, and then we kind of reconnected him. Our manager brought Descendants out when Milo kind of came back for some festival shows and reconnected with him and said, oh yeah, how do you feel about us coming over and recording? And they've sort of got it dialed in over there, that sort of music. And he's written some real catchy songs, and for me it's like it's cool to have an ear that's it's very trustworthy as far as like melody goes and harmonies and stuff. And I don't like using like tuning and all that stuff, and so like I can sing in tune, so just give me 20 goes at it and I'll be able to actually and yeah, having him there, like, even though we demo everything pretty much to the shit outside, there's very few decisions to be made, once we get there, kind of thing. I remember the first time we went there, and I was kind of waiting really to get his ideas on production and maybe arrangements or stuff. And he's like, what am I gonna do? Like, cut your 5 second guitar solo in half? Like, it's pretty lean anyway, what we're doing. So, and he's like, you guys know what you're doing. They've got this real simpatico sort of thing going on where there'll be one guy in another room with these kind of dog ears that hears things at 15K and stuff. And then there's Bill is like, that bass needs to be more gnarly or whatever, like just broad strokes. Is this achieving our original intent, when we came into this, like, and all that stuff. And it just works really well together. And for us, like, when we did that record in 2011, it was a real step up production wise, like, not casting any shade on our previous producers. I'm sure the vast majority of it was our fault for having anything to do with mixing, but they just seem to really really like lift the band. It just sounds way tougher than we are. My God, the Pet Food Factory was the first one that we did there, and then the Hive IT, and then the new one, the Cup of Pestilence.
Yeah, a couple of pestilence. That one starts right off the bat pretty damn strong. That's the song you did a video with off the bat, which was
Where drug dealers take their kids.
is there some tuning playing going on there? Is that like a lower?
Think he detuned, like we always play in like E flat, I guess,
Ah,
but
do you? You're one of those
then
guys.
cowards. The cowards is the term. Cowardly singers. Yeah, I think I lost my voice in some show in like 1998, and to get through the show, we tuned down and we never tuned back up.
Oh, well, that's a good story. That's a good story.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is easy now.
That was on my mind, Jay, because I did. I like I said, I just had that interview with Dimitri, and I actually had to have my friend, who's like an idiot savant guitarist, like go, how many is he playing with tuning here? And my friend wrote back like he, I don't even, he hardly even have time to listen to the whole record, but he knew like all of. Well, he goes, oh, he's in E flat and D minor and this, that, there. So it's like, oh, okay. And I talked to Dimitri, and he didn't even know what he was doing. He's like,
So he says.
so he
Yeah,
says, yes.
no, it's not too much trickery. A few bit of key change trickery throughout, but I, because I've got a very limited vocal range, so like it's pretty low. So trying to make songs interesting within that is quite tough sometimes. So trying to shorten songs is one way, and then another way is like, because our bass player is a really good singer. He's got a really high range, and so a lot of the time I'll get him to sing the lead line on as a harmony, and then I'll do the harmony as kind of a lead line, and then halfway through a chorus we'll kind of flip it, and then whatever the harmony is, I'll start singing it, or whatever the lead line is, I'll start singing it, and then I'll just sort of bluntly kind of revert whatever sort of force whatever key that now is into that part of the song, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but yeah, there's a fair bit of that on there.
It's nice to hear that you think it on that level. I mean, I wouldn't think that listening to it. What I do get is that you have, and this isn't an insult, but you do you admit it, you have like a limited
Love
range in
sentences
which you sing.
start like that.
So does that put you in a position where you think more, or in your mind think more about what you're saying? Like, is it really important than?
Well, the thing about this band is that we had like, so we had 60 demos for this album, and so there's like, we'll sort of just write anything, like any song, to within an inch of its life and give it its best chance ever, even if, you know, when you're writing you're like, I don't know about this, why am I even singing this, I don't care about it, you know, whatever, and then but still just give it its best chance, you know. So you do all the harmonies, record all the drum parts, guitars, make sure, you know, everything's like exactly how it should be in that song, and then put it in the bin. So when we come to choosing songs for the record, we basically have this spreadsheet where everyone in the band and our manager gets like an equal vote, and you basically try and pick your best like 20 songs or whatever. And if that's not enough music to make up half an hour's worth of music or whatever, then everyone gets a wild card. And so people start lobbying, you know, like, I'll vote for your bullshit dumb song if you like pick this one because I'm a genius or whatever. And so that's the record. So everyone's sort of generally not completely unhappy when it counts, like all democracies, you know, everyone's pretty sort of slightly invested in it, and everyone's had their say and stuff. And it means that really that any kind of thematic idea just goes completely out the window. And so whatever lyrics are on there is sort of just, you know, because the song could be great aside from the lyrics, and the lyrics are just decent enough that the song still sounds great. And then there might be other songs where the lyrics were fantastic, but the song was a fucking dump. And so those lyrics will never be heard. So it's sort of a slightly strange way of going about it. But so I guess what I'm saying is, I don't really kind of labor over whether what I'm saying is important enough because I can't make it interesting melodically or something like that.
I come from like the headphone generation of, and I'm a huge like Jethro Tull fan and Queen, who all have like they played with conceptual records, and that became like a taboo bad word in punk rock. But then even Ben would admit that he started playing with conceptual ideas as like a package, or you know, like the songs have, you know, they're all written within the same period, so there's some sort of feeling that comes out of it.
This record for me is like accidentally has this theme about my neighborhood, like all the people, this community that where we live, where you don't really get on with a lot of people, but then because you live there and you're all like putting out the recycling on the same night or whatever, and you're all like hanging out in the back lane or whatever, then there's all these characters, and you sort of accept, kind of have to take all comers And yeah, that's a good thing about community is that you don't get on with everyone and you have to meet with them on some sort of level, like of civility and, welcome, like being welcoming and stuff to really be able to thrive there. And then a lot of the songs on this record, and like you say, just because of the time that you wrote it in and where you were living and who you were with and stuff, there sort of is this kind of vague theme about that through the record.
Do you think I've been thinking about that too. I went to a school about being in theater, about collectives, about the importance of working with each other and community. I actually just talked to Daryl from Bollweevils about community. And now they have a record called Essential, which is about essential, because they're all the people in the band are essential workers, like doctors and stuff like that. But what I'm getting at is there something about that that's going in the world now? Is there something that you're keying into that is important about reconnecting with that idea of community and the importance of each other? Am I putting too much on this?
No, I love it. I love it. Like that's my whole life is like my wife and I, we're very social people, and yeah, during lockdowns and stuff, that was like miserable, like having that taken away from us in a way, like, and it probably did put a little bit of an extra kind of importance on that, to think that, for your own mental health and the health of your neighborhood and stuff, like. And they're the things that you sort of have control over, like when everything's sort of wildly out of control, they're the things that you can sort of manipulate in some way by just being like a good neighbor and, being social and accepting all comers.
Yeah, my friend Ben, who I just brought up earlier, he had a, during the
A lot of
pandemic.
bands in this conversation.
There are a lot of, yeah, that's right. There's my singer band, this band, and your band. But he had a child within that, and his mother was never able to see the child for like 3 years, and Australia was pretty strict about that. Like he couldn't get there, and Japan was too. So it was like crazy, families being separated.
Yeah, miserable.
Fad has become one of the labels, one of the last ones standing, I think, of the true, like, integrity driven, like, labels that's out there. What are they doing for you? How does that relationship work with you?
We never speak to each other ever.
Never.
That's shit. No, he's just like, I don't know, they've been really, really nice to us, like for a band that, like, it's not, they're not buying houses on Friends or Rum record sales. It's good that they're into it, or at least they're told to be into it by the boss.
Right, yeah.
But no, I think yeah, like they're making records and putting it in shops, and it does enable us to go to places like Europe every now and then, and to Japan and stuff. Like last time we were in Europe, really the crowds, they only wanted to hear our last two records. Like those two fat records were the ones that they, and which was great for me because like I'm just singing in a sweet key and
Yeah.
just never lose the voice.
That's actually a nice thing. I don't know if people listening to this podcast know, as a musician, that's actually really great to hear, because usually your beginning stuff is what everyone wants to hear, and then you're trying to repeat yourself and you're never able to quite get there.
And I really started writing good songs in 2011. And I think definitely the production on those records is gave us a leg up too. Like, they just sound like sonically they come out of the box sounding tough, and everything's in the right spot.
Yeah, I would say that too. I went back and listened to the couple of the older ones and new ones, and not even just on the material you're writing, but that it does grab you, that sonic sound at the end. One of the things I wanted to hit with you, just because I interested in periods of time where things go sort of dark in a band, like dark as in not dark as in bad, but this one does sound like it was a little bad, but dark as in nothing's going on. But I'm also I was I I keep on referring back in my mind for some reasons about this interview I did with the Promise Ring, and Davey had got a brain tumor, and we talked a lot about that. But there's this period, I think it was between that first Fat Records and the second one, where you guys start falling apart.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard of a worm. I've heard of those things. I actually was just thinking about the other day because I'm like, I got a stomach ache because I have a worm. But in the brain.
It was wholly unpleasant. It was basically it was a so yeah, I've been vegetarian for years and but traveled a lot, and my wife and I were in Central America, South America, and picked up this thing that lives in pig flesh, and which I had at first was shocked, but yeah, rewind a little bit. So basically, how I had this seizure out of the blue, never happened before. Woke up in hospital at RPA in Sydney, where they basically said, "Yeah, you've got this lesion on your brain. It's a tumor of some sort, like a guy presenting your age with nothing else really wrong with him. It's always a melanoma. White guy in Australia, it's always a well melanoma. We just haven't found it yet, but it's probably that. And if it's what we think it is, aggressive, 5 months to live, perhaps." Yeah, and so 3 weeks before they said, "We won't know what it is, whether it's benign or malignant, until we take it out." And they took it out, and woke up, and they're like, "It's not a tumor. It's like some weird infection." And I'm like, "What the fuck?" And like, yeah, they're like, "Yeah, it's a neurocysticercosis, I think is the name, which is like a parasite that lives in pig flesh." And it's like pretty common in a lot of areas around the world, a lot of places that we'd been to. But having the fact that there's a pig worm in your brain as the good news is a fucking weird day.
Can I quote you
Yes.
on that?
Yeah.
And you did write a song about that. I didn't have time to find out what album what that wasn't or what the song is, but you did write a song called Pigworm, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like
Does
I
that
feel like
detail the incident?
I summed up all the emotions I think that were going on at the time. I think it basically just goes, "Big one, big one, big one, big one, big one, big one. What the fuck?" But yeah, it took me a while to get over that psychologically, really.
I'm
Like,
just saying,
with
we're laughing about, but that stuff is devastating. I mean, you start thinking
sort
about
of.
your
I mean, it was
life.
good.
Have you done with your life what you're supposed to do? I mean, are you taking care of the
Yeah, just
people you
having a,
love?
I had a young kid at the time, and was like, oh yeah, awful. But also, turned into a pretty good story in the end. But yeah, was sort of looking over my shoulder for a year or two there, like afterwards, going like, what's the universe going to throw at me next? But yeah, I feel like I'm pretty much through it. Started taking things for granted again, so that's got to be
Oh, that's good. That's good.
good.
Did I come across that you actually were did you play shows with like Teenage Baga Rockets, my good
Oh
friends?
yeah, we've got some mutual friends there with Ray and Cody and stuff.
Yeah,
Those kids are
Cody's like
sweethearts.
my brother. We have the same birthday. I mean,
Really?
not year because I'm much older than him, but yeah, we have the same. And every year I keep forgetting that he has the same birthday than I do. And then I invite him to play my 50th birthday and I completely forgot it was his birthday too. So
How old? So we see where the hierarchy goes in this friendship. Looking for me today.
those guys play with you when they're in like in Australia, or where did you hook up with those
Yeah, we've
folks?
definitely toured. We've definitely toured with them in Australia. They are absolute sweethearts, and good bands, not without their tragedy, obviously. Caught up with Ray at the Blasting Room. Came and brought his family along and stuff. I think Cody was there too. I can't remember. I'm gonna say he was.
Did you get to play with Chuka? Have you seen him play with him?
Who? What?
The drummer.
I haven't seen him live since he's been in the band.
He's
But
good. He's good. I mean, I had him on the podcast, and it's quite a thing to try to take the place of a twin, but I mean
I can imagine.
yeah.
Yeah, actually they did. They played in Sydney, and I went and saw them and pointedly left before they started.
I've done that too. I did that to Sack. I left before Sack.
yeah.
I put in my hello.
Yeah. What do they want from us? Yeah, we all know your band's great.
Speaking of what is the, I mean, it's, you know, we get older, we take things a little slower. Is there any touring plans, or what are you going to do with this record? It's
Yeah, so
really good, and people seem to be a little bit excited about you guys having something material out. What's your plan?
yeah, exciting for us too to go out with something new. Yeah, we started tour that starts in end of May, and then we'll sort of go probably most of the year touring that, I'd say. Yeah, we're touring with one of my childhood favorite bands, the Meanies. So
Oh,
they're going
yeah, you
to be
brought them up a
supporting
couple
them.
times, yeah.
Yeah, they're supporting us, which is like equal parts fantastic and slightly awkward because they were my like Led Zeppelin or whatever. Like kind of heroes when we were kids. And but it'll be great. Their new record is actually really great too. Desperate Measures is the name of the album. But yeah, really good. Like kind of, I don't know, a lot of bands when they don't really have any kind of record company pressures or anything like that, when once they sort of work it out, for me, like, you know, they're kind of a distillation of their all that was good about them in the first place, you know, but with better production and, you know, more concise ideas and concise songs and stuff. But yeah, they're definitely one of those bands that kind of yeah, it's just getting better.
What, Jay, if you don't mind me asking, what do you is what do you have another life? Like, what is your other life? Are you?
So in here, I record a bunch of bands, and I play in a few different bands. I'm playing in a band with my wife called the Neptune Power Federation. Which is like a psychedelic kind of rock band. She wears these amazing costumes and plays the part of this kind of time traveling witch that's come back through time to destroy the patriarchy. And and
Course.
we've got like graphic novels that come out with the records and stuff. And
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
been over to Europe, going back to Europe soon. The German like battle jacket wearing men really like it. They're like, oh yeah, this is occult rock, this is my music. So playing a festival in Hamburg in coming up. And yeah, that's been r real fun and real nice to do something with my wife that's not parenting, you know, like we're sort of forced to babysitters and go out. And I record all the music and stuff and play bass and percussion and stuff. And yeah, it's a really good time.
Do you tour the whole band with that, or is it just the two of you, or what do you?
Yeah, it's the whole band. Yeah, we've got like a legitimate shredder on guitar, and then Lauren's like she's a really got a wild range, like very theatrical, high kind of singing and real nonsense lyrics. A lot of sort of fantasy bullshit. Yeah, it's a really good time. Yeah, we were booked to play it when in COVID. We were going to play Freak Valley with Fu Manchu in the south of Germany, and like Endless Boogie and stuff. And then we're playing this other festival in Austria, in the Austrian Alps, called Funkenflug. And like you look at the trailer for this thing, and it's wild. It's like light beyond the darkness, and like all the like everything's on fire. The stage is made out of fallen logs. There's like some guy in a Burzum shirt and a cowbell, like, you know, like fucking wild. And Lauren's like, because she's like a registered nurse by a trade, you know, and they're gonna find out I'm not a real witch, they're gonna fucking burn me. Yeah, it's a really good time.
I love that. I love that stuff. I love to hear when punks are just all over the board as other things they do, because it gets a reputation for being very blinders on sort of genre. So I love that.
We're still pretty tribal, you know, even in that world, in that sort of heavy hard rock sort of world too, like the metal stuff, like people have very specific kind of things that they like. Like we had this one guy in Belgium when we were touring there, and he's like, I hear in other band. And I was like, yep. And he's like, what kind of music? And I was like, oh, I guess it's kind of skate punk sort of stuff. And he's like, I do not like the sound of this. it's good. And yeah, we got this like legitimate shredder kind of guy. He plays in this wild kind of old sort of proto sort of rock band in Australia called Buffalo. They were around in like the early 70s, and there's one guy that's still alive, and he had to have like eight auditions. Like their records go for like $800 in Europe and stuff, and you know, and he auditioned like it seemed like it went on for weeks and weeks, and he finally got in. So yeah, he's our legit guy, and then the other two guys, the guitarist, who's it's sort of his brainchild. And the drummer and me, who've just been kicking around in fucking punk bands forever, you know, just trying to keep up and, you know, stay in the background, root notes, you know. But yeah, it's really fun.
That reminded me of I was just talking to Dimitri about do you know Kevin Apers, you know, from the Apers, the that band?
No.
Oh, but he's a Rotterdam band, you know, the Netherlands. And he's been
Yeah.
doing punk, he's been releasing pop punk records since like the late 90s, and he's been in bands, and all of a sudden out of the nowhere he just like with a couple of friends started a goof band called like a hardcore, like metal hardcore band. And now they're playing in front of like 10,000, 11,000
Yeah,
people. So this band called
amazing.
Insanity Alert. So
Yeah,
it's so
so good.
strange.
Yeah, you never know around the corner.
Jay, I think I did. Do you have any questions for me? Is there any dying question you need my honesty for 5 minutes?
Is Ben Weasel really a cunt? No.
More so over the years, he did. Yeah.
More Billy Joe. I mean, I don't know him at all, but
Yeah, in the
you know.
beginning he was an asshole, but he didn't have the large amounts of paranoia that came with him over years and years of
That's a shame. I mean, I don't like sort of cursing a band because of some shitty member, you know, like to destroy music, you know, seems miserable to me, you know, just because some guys are fuckwit. And you know, unless they're like in my world and you know, they're like I'm living next door to them and they're being a shit neighbor, then you know, what do I care?
I mean, I couldn't listen to, I love listening to it. Like I'm one of those, you know, some people they go in the studio and then they're done and they never listen to it again. I listen to everything I've been on all the time, but there was quite a few years there where I couldn't
Couldn't
even
do it.
listen to it, couldn't do it. Then I came back around and then, you know, people would say to me, you know, they'd feel bad about going to see Weasel. And I was like, you know, me and Ben, it wasn't good, but I still want people to like it. You know, it's my baby. Why wouldn't I want people to, you know, still appreciate it.
And hopefully when you get distance from that sort of those sort of conflicts, then it sort of becomes, I don't know, less slightly less emotionally sort of jarring, you know, when you hear it.
I still get jarred occasionally, but the music I can do.
Oh man, so good to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. We can keep the dialogue going some if you want, or I'll reach out or you reach
Yeah, man.
out. But it's good
Yeah.
all right, Jay. It was very good to talk to you. So thanks so much
You too.
for doing
Thank
this with
you.
me. Yeah. All
Yeah, awesome. I feel
right.
very honored.
Oh, well, thank you. I was great. I love learning about people I don't know. So thank you for opening
Cool,
up to
man.
me. Yeah.
Awesome.
And when I
We'll
hang
talk.
up, it's a real hang up. So that's
Yeah,
the way the
no
show
worries.
works. So
All
all
right.
right. Bye-bye.
Great. Just don't understand.
you have made it this far, you just got done listening to Where Drug Dealers Take Their Kids by Frenzel Rahm on the record The Cup of Pestilence, which was just released, if you're listening to this in the present tense, in 2023 on Fat Records. Hey, everybody. I think that was pretty great. I think we actually got along really well. I think I've actually been getting pretty well along with these people I have not met ever, and I think I've been getting along with them pretty well. I think that means they're good, and I'm good at what I do. So please, good segue, donate money, patreon.com, jugheadsbasement at patreon.com, $2, $5, $10 tiers, or share the podcast, friends, shoes, dogs, mountains, transfigurational beings, wizards, and platypuses. Share or review. Write one. Now, with words or sounds, audio or text. Good. Bye.